Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Well, this is a first for me. I have never met a prima ballerina, but that's about to change, and I couldn't be more excited. My guest today is Wendy Whalen, whose career with the New York City Ballet spanned an astonishing 30 years, double that of most ballerinas. It all began in her hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. In 1970, at the age of 3, Wendy began taking ballet lessons. At 9, she started intensive training at the Louisville Ballet Academy. Then, in 1981, Wendy auditioned for the School of American Ballet, the official school of the New York City Ballet, and was accepted into its summer program. A year later, she moved to Manhattan to continue studying as a full-time student, and in 1984 was named an apprentice with the New York City Ballet. 2 years after that, she was invited to join the Corps de Ballet. As a principal dancer, Wendy has performed just about every Balanchine role and worked closely with Jerome Robbins. She's originated leading roles in works by esteemed choreographers including Twyla Tharp, Christopher Wheeldon, and Wayne McGregor. Wendy's been a guest artist with the Royal and Kirov Ballets and has danced on nearly every major stage around the world. She's been the recipient of many honors, including the Dance Magazine Award in 2007, and in 2011, both the Jerome Robbins Award and a Bessie Award for her sustained achievement in performance. In 2013, Wendy premiered her inaugural independent work, Restless Creature, a collection of 4 contemporary vignettes in collaboration with 4 young choreographers. Restless Creature also happens to be the name of the recent documentary that presents an intimate portrait of Wendy's departure in 2014 from the New York City Ballet. Following her retirement, Wendy joined the faculty of Ballet Academy East and was named Artistic Associate at New York City Center. Clearly, there is plenty to talk about, so let's meet and get to know Wendy Whalen. So thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure to be here.
Why did you start taking ballet lessons at 3? Were you pirouetting around the house?
No, I was actually quite physical. I was a middle child of 3 born together kids. I mean, 3 years apart. We were one, boom, boom, Irish twins and all that. So I was the middle one, and I was busting to get out, and apparently I was being very physical on the baby. My baby sister, and I would jump on her.
As if who needed her? We were fine,
exactly,
just the two of us.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my mom was like desperate to get me something to put my energy into as a toddler. Mm-hmm. And her mother ran into my mom's old ballet teacher who taught all the little kids in the area, in the city, ballet. And so she said, bring Wendy over. And I started with Miss Ginny Wooten when I was 3 years old. And she's still in my life today.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I think I immediately was smitten with the movement, the creativity, the focus even of it, just getting the energy out, the restlessness. Mm-hmm. That's been my issue, is I have had nervous energy my whole life.
You can't sit still.
No.
And but, you know, just because somebody has nervous energy doesn't mean that they do what you did years later.
Somehow it just happened at the right time that I found this focus. Mm-hmm. And the focus turned into this, like, pencil sharpener. And it just, I went right into it. And I never looked back.
And so it was all of this was a natural progression.
Absolutely.
When you were 9 and you started this, yeah. And then when you auditioned. But yeah. What was that like in terms of the idea that you would leave Louisville?
I didn't think I would leave Louisville until I was around maybe 12. Mm-hmm. I started working with some teachers that were, I don't know, a little more open-minded and then saw the world a little differently in ballet. Mm-hmm. And they had spent time in New York and thought, oh, this kid's, she's got something, and, you know, I think she needs to try it and go for it, because you never know.
And to expand her world.
Yeah.
We could only do so much with her here.
Exactly, yeah. So.
And while you were in Louisville, though, mm-hmm. You did perform. It was more than just taking dance classes.
No, I performed. The Louisville Ballet, at the time I was there, was run by some dancers from the London Festival Ballet. So I was already surrounded by these world-class dance artists. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of who I was working with. When I started working intensively. And then they changed their school into more of a company, and they said, the school kids need to go over here now. So I started working with a teacher who was also renowned in Louisville, who was from the Paris Opera Ballet.
Figure, huh?
I had the world at my feet right there. I mean, in little Louisville, Kentucky.
I was just going to say, I didn't mean to dump on Louisville.
No,
but
I mean, it's kind of unheard of that you have top-of-the-line, world-class artists who've studied you know, these incredible schoolings come to Louisville and offer this incredible information. And I had them right there for me. And so that kept me, I mean, it was just like a treasure chest of information.
So it was more than just the Nutcracker at Christmas time for you.
Well, it was, I was, by the time I was 10, I was studying ballet every single day, except for Sunday.
Wow.
Every day I would go, and I loved it. I went romping down the street telling my neighbors, I take ballet every single day. I was so proud to be so serious at 10
amazing?
Years old.
Uh-huh.
But the Nutcracker, of course, was a big deal. And it was the big performance with the adult dancers, the powerful dancers in the city. And we had, you know, well, often we had live music. We had the Louisville Orchestra, which is renowned. We had incredible sets and costumes. We had guest artists coming in from the, you know, New York. Joffrey dancers came in
wow.
and performed with us. So I got to see the real thing. And when I very first saw that, I was 6 years old. That was the first time I saw a ballet.
And you watched it with your jaw dropping?
I did. And my mom said, go look up, go run up the aisle and look in the orchestra pit. Look what's in the orchestra pit. And I was like, oh. That's where the music comes from.
Yeah, people.
You know, and mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. All these people are coming together and making this beautiful experience for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that blew me away. And then when I was 8, my friend from school said, let's go audition for the Nutcracker. And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was like, what if you don't make it? You know, she was already worried about the heartbreak
of
at
course.
8 years old. But my friend and I, we were so confident. We were like, well, you know. We're going to do it. Well, and I literally said to my mom, she told me this, I'm going to make it at 8 years old. And I did. And my friend did too, luckily. So we went into this world together and got to live in it on the inside.
And it was okay for you, that incredible focus, that incredible rigorous schedule?
I loved it. I loved it. It was, I felt like I had been given the key to a magic kingdom every Saturday. From 10 until 5, I lived in the Louisville Ballet Studios and watched these other dancers and practiced my own
Isn't
little
that
child
wonderful?
Steps.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't get enough of it. And then my friends that I met there, you know, just being in this world with these people, it was being with these people that
mm-hmm.
I loved, these creative, interacting, serious, humorous, smart. It was just a different kind of energy, and I loved it.
So then logic would dictate
yeah.
that the next step was leaving Louisville, which you did.
Yeah, I every year I got a little bit better. I got a little bit better, mm-hmm. a little more focused, a little more confident.
Mm-hmm.
And these teachers were kind of sculpting me towards going. And they even found the audition for me to go to. And they said, there's no audition in the area, but you can have your mom drive you an hour and a half to Cincinnati. And you can audition for School of American Ballet, which is what they recommended I did because it was a solid school.
And you were how old? You were 10?
At that time, I was 13.
Because
uh-huh.
I read mm-hmm. that you were diagnosed with scoliosis when you were 12.
12,
so
yeah.
That's major.
It was, yeah. I had a year before I went to New York, or even thought to go to New York, of trying to get my spine aligned and figuring out, oh, my God, maybe that dream isn't going to happen.
Exactly.
I don't know what's going to—
Was that an option, that there wasn't going to be an option?
Oh, yeah. Oh, uh-huh. yeah. That was a huge option.
Mm-hmm.
They were waiting to see, you know, will this— I did some therapy for it. I did traction for a week at a time in the hospital.
Wow.
Living with a head halter on.
Jeez.
And 12-pound strapped to my head. Pulling at my spine.
And no dance classes.
No dance classes. And I lived in this traction for most of the day and all through the night. And it was horrendous. And then at the end of that week, and they measured me all the time to see if I'd grown, if my spine had lined up. And I grew an inch and a half after the first week from 12 pounds on my little 12-year-old
yeah, no
head.
Kidding.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then they put me in a plaster body cast from my shoulders to my hips. And that was the treatment at the time in the 70s. And I lived for a month in this 15-pound body cast. You know, I look back on it now and I'm thinking, how in the heck did I ever accept this or deal with this or not cave?
Exactly.
And I just—
That was just a bump in your road.
I just
which
did
is
it. Yeah.
Amazing.
And the great thing was I was with these incredible teachers who said, Wendy— We know you're going to be going through a tough time this summer.
But we're going to wait for you.
No.
Oh.
They said, come in. Come to the class with your back brace, your plaster cast on, and move in any way you can. and stay focused in your head. Don't lose your focus. And I went in there and certain people laughed at me because
but you're
I looked
only
like
12. How do you do
I looked
that?
Like a football player because I had all this plaster. It was 15 pounds.
Wow.
And I didn't know how to deal it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. My teacher's just there and she's supporting me and I'm on my own in this side here and I'm just bending as much as I can and I'm lifting my leg as much as I can, but I'm thinking of all the corrections she's giving all the other kids. So I was using my head. I was using my brain. And it was actually I was able to focus that. Again, it's a focus thing. So I could focus all her corrections for how I could do it at that time going through that process and that with that hindrance of a body cast. But and so my turnout got better. I wasn't concerned about lifting my leg. I was concerned about what I can do at a low level. And that made a huge difference for everything because I could focus on one or two or three small things instead of 800 big things. And then I would get that body cast off after a month, go back into the hospital, do another week of traction, and then do another body cast. So I did that for 5 months.
No kidding.
And the minute I would get this body cast off in the hospital and I had a free hour to like go to some other room and do some kind of creative work without the traction on, I would do grand jetés down the hall, flying down the hall. And I could jump like crazy because all this weight was gone.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I was like, what's happening to me? I felt like a bird. And so that process did that for me physically and did so much for me mentally, just dealing with it. And I've used that 5 months of my life for my whole life. And it's made all the difference.
You know, at the risk of being a little crude, it's such an example of making chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Absolutely.
What an amazing story.
Yeah. You transform and you make something negative a creative act and it becomes another flower.
That's just...
And I didn't know how that would work. And I don't know if my teacher did this either, but I look back on it and it was the absolute greatest gift that she told me to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Welcomed me into the room. No judgments. No laughing at me. You know, just come in.
And, you weren't dismissed. Oh yeah. Well, it was nice knowing you, Wendy. And then moving on.
She saw all the different ways of using your brain and your body. And,
fabulous. Yeah. So you get over that big hump.
Yeah.
And now it's time for you to go to New York.
Yeah.
You audition. And
for Suzanne Farrell.
Oh,
is right, in Cincinnati.
And then you come to New York City with a family member, or you go to, it's like being in a camp, so to speak, you know, summer camp kind of thing?
They didn't have dorms at the time.
So what did you do?
So my mom did a ton of research and tried to find other kids that were coming to New York that had a parent that could go and that needed an extra roomie that could pay for an extra bed. And I fit in with these girls from Michigan, of all places. My mom hooked up with this parent from Michigan, and she said, I'm bringing three girls. I'll be there the whole time. We have a room for an extra, and I just blended in with them. And
so you were there for 3 months?
No, at that time I was there for 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
For the
summer. It's like session one of camp, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then when you came back, I mean, it was clear to you, I would assume, even at that young age, that you were going to move on out.
I felt from the teachers at the School of American Ballet, I felt positive feedback. I felt confidence from them.
Mm-hmm.
I got moved up within the first 2 days of my summer workshop. They were like, put me in level 3. And then the next week I'm in level 4. And so they're like, she's a good worker. She's making progress already. So I felt them tune into me and notice me. And then they did ask me to stay for that year. But I was just 14 and a lot of things left to learn and to grow and stabilize.
I understand.
And I was just getting ready to go to high school. And my mom and dad were like, we need a year of dress rehearsal.
Yes, so this is the big time. This is pretty seismic
to
leave what you know and what you're comfortable with to come to New York City.
Yeah, and it was a financial issue as well because I had to go to high school in New York City, and I wasn't going to go to just a public school. I was going to go to the professional children's school, which is where all the School of American Ballet students, most of them went because they could go from school to a ballet class, back to school, back and forth. And that was, at the time, I think it was about $5,000, which is more than my parents could afford.
No scholarships?
I got a dance scholarship, but not for school. There wasn't that. So my teacher found a benefactor to pay for that for me.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. So now it's pretty obvious what your career is going to be with all this positive.
Well, you never know. Again,
thought this is
Balanchine had just died when mm-hmm. I got to New York. He died my first year mm-hmm. in New York. He died on the day of my very first performance in a work of his.
Wow.
At the School of American Ballet Workshop, April 30th, 1983. And so everything gets turned upside down. Balanchine's gone.
What's going to happen? What are we going to do?
All the dancers in the company were, well, you know, he's why I'm here. You know, they're all thinking, do I leave now? Do I stay? What does this mean? And I didn't know if, you know, who was going to focus on me or find me interesting at all. So a couple years in the school, I did a couple of the workshops, and both Baryshnikov and Peter Martins noticed me. Baryshnikov asked me to come take class at ABT, but I was told by the school that Peter Martins had interest in me too. So I was like, what am I going to place my bets?
What an embarrassment of riches!
But who's gonna really get me?
Yeah, I understand.
I didn't know, you know. But my love was with City Ballet. I loved the Balanchine choreography. I loved the abstract works of his. That was what I was drawn to. So I stuck it out. And a year later, I got my apprenticeship.
As you look back over mm-hmm. your career, do you gasp?
Yeah, I do.
Even despite the fact that it's been 30 years, do you still can't believe it?
I look back and I think I'm the luckiest girl that ever. I can't imagine. I didn't expect to have the experience I had there, which was, to me, phenomenal, mm-hmm. sublime.
Because?
Diving into that world 180%. I mean, it's like you spend every day with this group of people for 10 or 12 hours a day, every day except for one day of the week. And there's no windows in this building, you know, and you just focus on this thing and you live in this creative dish with these people. And there's love, there's hate, there's
jealousy.
Humor, there's jealousy. It's everything. But at the same time, it's this community of people working together for one reason.
Exactly.
And that always rises
is the tie that
to the
binds.
Top. Mm-hmm. And so it's this family experience to this nth degree of, you know, you just love these people no matter how hard it's been to work and deal. It's just this weird, crazy love.
How does one become a principal dancer? How is it that you break away from the group?
A lot of that I see as luck, timing.
More than talent?
Everybody has talent.
Yeah, duh. Right.
Pretty much.
Right.
I mean,
so why did you get the role and I didn't?
At my time, I think what catapulted me forward was, I mean, thank God I had those years in that 15-pound body cast. I was a strong girl. I was a strong female dancer. I could turn. I could jump. I could do anything they wanted me to do.
In a sense, better than some of the other.
I think I had an extra level of strength that helped me show myself in a little bit more of a solid way. And I think that Peter Martins at the time was looking for that kind of a dancer, someone he could count on. And I was that person.
But in spite of that, the fact that you wound up getting scoliosis,
yeah.
right? Does
mm-hmm.
that not preclude the fact that something else could have happened to you?
I mean, anything could have happened at any moment.
But how are you going to live like that? So that was not necessarily in the back of your head.
I'm not thinking about that at all. I'm thinking about in the moment.
Yeah.
How do I do what I'm needed
to
do?
Well, that's the neurotic in me, maybe. Mm-hmm. Oh, if I had scoliosis, that doesn't mean that.
A lot of dancers have scoliosis. And even luckily for me, one of the principal dancers that I most admired in New York City Ballet had an extreme scoliosis, Heather Watts. So I could stand behind her bar.
Gotcha.
And watch how she worked. And, you know, luckily she was one of my favorite dancers to watch. And I realized how beautiful her curvature was. And I loved it. And I kind of went into me and I started to think that it was unique and a special thing.
So what was your first role as a principal dancer? Obviously, you must remember that.
I did a few principal roles when I was in the Corps de Ballet. It's sink or swim there. You know, let's put that kid in to this part. And see how they do. And if they swim, mm-hmm. we'll give them another part. If they sink, well, maybe we'll give them a little break, let them get a little stronger, and then we'll try them in this. Or maybe, nope, that kid doesn't have it.
he or she will remain in the corps.
It's going to depend on, you know, how the director sees each dancer and how they want to direct them and if they're suited to what he needs or she needs, the director. So
somebody mm-hmm. who could really hit it out of the park in a Swan Lake, mm-hmm. for example, might not be able to do that in a Peter Martins dance.
It's really up to the creative directors, the artistic directors, and how they, you know, want to sculpt you and how they see you, how they vision you, envision you.
Does that mean stereotype?
Sometimes. Uh-huh. Sometimes there's a little bit of that. You know, for a long time, I was considered that strong girl. I was, give it to Wendy. Let her do the jumps with the boys. She can do that. That's what I did. I was the tomboy girl for a long time. And I needed to break out of that. And I had to find my own way to break out of that because it wasn't necessarily going to happen for me. I needed to change their mind a little bit.
Interesting.
Have them see me differently. And that wasn't always easy to do.
So what was life like for you? Just kind of this constant, no pun intended, dancing as fast as I can.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even a pun. It's serious because it's City Ballet.
That's where we get it from, I guess.
Yeah, we are fast. Well, very focused, sheltered in a way, safe in a way. Safe, but, terrified always, kind mm-hmm. of, because you're always going out on stage and learning something quickly, learning and going out in front of 2,500 people and seeing if you can swim and not sink. Mm. But at the same time, you don't have to deal with the outside world on a daily basis. You can kind of just
Are you sheltered by your group of dancers and people?
I used it that way. Mm-hmm. Some dancers don't always use it that way. But because we're in there 10 to 12 hours a day.
We need each other.
We need each other. And we're kind of forced into this situation, And it's safe and it's comfortable to be around other dancers. And I'm meeting a lawyer or a banker and we're going to go on a date. It's always a little bit weird because what do you talk about?
Yeah.
And that's different dancers are different with different people. But for me, I was always like, I'm just safer with the dancers, And
was there a tremendous amount of jealousy? Or why is Wendy getting all those
roles? There's that always, yeah.
How do you deal with that? Or you just have to block it out?
You just keep that focus. You hear things along the way. Someone's upset because they thought they should get that and you mm-hmm. got it. Or you feel that way about somebody else. Why is she getting it? I'm ready for it. Mm-hmm. That's part of the game.
So you spent a good part of your career mm-hmm. with the New York City Ballet, but how did this happen to go to the Kirov? And where was the other one?
The Royal Ballet. Invitations. When I went to the Royal Ballet, Anthony Dowell was the director of the Royal Ballet at the time, and I think he had seen or heard that I had been doing this new dance that was a kind of a popular new piece of choreography. And one of his dancers was not able to do it. And or he just wanted to have a little bit of something different come in and fresh do it. But he invited my partner and I to come and do a few shows of that piece with the Royal Ballet. And So
Wendy, you have a lot of years with New York City Ballet mm-hmm. and you're getting older mm-hmm. and you're getting wiser. Is it a time when you know I have to go or it's an outside force that tells you you've got to hang up those ballet slippers?
That's different for each dancer. Very different. This situation is very unique for each personal dancer. For me, I can only really tell you my story, but I felt...
And please do.
Yeah. I felt very physical, very active into my 40s. I was dancing regularly.
Is that unheard of?
Maybe. It's rare.
It's not common that one's dancing into
a lot of ballerinas want to have children. I never wanted to have kids. That was never my thing. And I knew that as a young girl. I don't want to have a baby.
You're not going to get sidetracked.
No. It worked for me in ballet because I didn't lose any time. I didn't change my body through a pregnancy with it changes your back often. I didn't have to change my focus to another human being. I'm going to bide, my time and get a couple extra years in that maybe another ballerina who has a family
can't
or doesn't want to. For me, dance was everything, and I did feel a little bit of changing in my body, a little stiffening up, a little bit of this or that, but nothing dramatic. But I did feel my people were leaving. My people were gone.
I hear you.
And I was the one person of my generation, or one of a handful left. Mm-hmm. So that's a different energy. And all these young people are being groomed because that's the way it works. So, well, we need to find a role for this young ballerina or this young man. And so, you know, we want to give them that chance. You've done it for 30 years or you've done it for 15 years. Don't you want to do something else? You know, me, not so much. You know, I'm still practicing it. Mm-hmm. That's how I always looked at everything, was like, I'm still practicing it because, and even if it's not as good as it was when I was in my 20s, I still felt valid and I still felt.
At that you could still bring that same passion to the role.
Yeah, and even something different.
Yes.
Maybe something less spark in my technique, but something more wise in my soul. And that's something I enjoyed being in my 30s and 40s, was bringing that to a part. But then all those people are kind of gone and I'm kind of hanging on and I'm feeling like I'm in a shoe that's slightly too small. You know, it's not, and I'm,
yeah,
and I'm
I got that.
Very
I know
wise
mean.
Now. You know, I'm in my 40s and I'm a woman. And it's different to be a woman as opposed to a girl.
It's not that bright-eyed kind of,
it's
you know,
different.
Naivete.
Yeah, and I have things to say, and I have a voice. And, you know, maybe that gets in the way at the ballet sometimes. So I felt a lot of these little things along the way.
And so it was much more than just something physical.
Oh, yeah. They started to take me out of roles and without talking to me about it, which was the main thing was like, I'm not sure what's going on, but all of a sudden I'm not doing something that I used to do that. And that broke my heart.
I mean, why can't they be upfront about that?
I think because they didn't want to hurt me. You know,
but
I
what they're doing,
I don't,
it the hurts. Insidious part, it's, yeah, what's the difference?
So it's just complicated. It's complicated. It's emotional. And there's, you know, it takes emotional maturity to deal with both sides of this conundrum. So I was brought into a meeting, and I went into the meeting thinking it was about something else. But then the meeting all of a sudden becomes about, maybe you shouldn't do this role anymore, which was a surprise.
What year was that? Do you remember?
That was 2011.
Okay.
It just surprised me. It caught me off guard. So it hurt a little bit more. And it actually hurt a lot. It tore me up. And then 2 months later, pain started happening. Mm. I didn't have pain before.
In your feet?
My legs, my feet, my feet. Actually, it started at my feet.
Yeah.
And it slowly went up. And within a year, it was in my hip. And a year after that meeting, I couldn't close a fifth position, which is the bare basics of ballet. And I thought, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
What's happening to
now
me?
Now it's out of your
it's
control.
Done. Yeah. It's done. I'm over. I'm finished. And it was just
a knife in your heart.
A knife in my heart. A knife in I was just like, my whole life just got flipped out of control. The rug was swept under my feet. It was because of the way I approached my job, was that kind of 100% focus, and to have that
ripped away.
Yes, just
absolutely.
It just
I can feel that.
You know, and you don't have to give yourself to that degree, but I did.
Well, you're also not an idiot.
I'm not an idiot, but I know what it takes to do what I do. And it does take that. It takes your heart and soul and your body. Mm-hmm.
It's really great to be in control. How often are any of us? And that doesn't mean that it's not being a ballet dancer, you know?
But so soon after that meeting had happened, I started thinking, well, I better start figuring out what's next because this isn't going to be here for very long. And then the pain started happening as I was preparing for this next thing, which was my project Restless Creature.
Yes, let's talk about that. This is not in 2011. It's later than that, isn't it?
I started to plan it in 2012.
Okay.
And then it premiered in 2013. I took myself off of Pointe Shoes. I put myself into a different language. I put myself into the studio with very different minded movers and thinkers. And I wanted to learn from them. That's what I wanted to do, was like start picking their brains and start to feel what it felt like to move differently in this body that had been so trained so extremely for so long. Wanted to break down what I had built up because it was breaking for me already. So I thought of that idea of transformation. And I thought, to stay in my world of dance, at this time, I would have to alter it and rethink it, reevaluate it, and find a new way.
And sort of reinvent yourself.
Absolutely, reinvent myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought with reinvention would come youth. And I thought,
and a raison d'etre.
Yes. And it somewhat, you know, has done that.
I can totally relate to that.
It's taken time. Mm-hmm. But to be at the bottom of the barrel again a little bit, I won't be at the bottom of the barrel because I've spent this career in the world of dance.
Sure.
But to approach my life as like, teach me how to do that. My body does not know how to do that is invigorating.
That we can always have a second act.
And a third and a fourth.
And a third and a fourth.
Yeah.
So how did that then morph into this documentary with the same name of Restless Creature?
At the time I was doing Restless Creature, I was also fundraising for the project. Mm-hmm. I fundraised to pay for the whole project myself. And one of my philanthropists, Diana DeMena, a wonderful New York philanthropist, incredible woman, came to me with this idea. Well, why don't we make a documentary of this process of coming up with this new project? And I was like, well, Diana, I'm in a lot of pain right now. And I don't really know what's going to happen with my life. Mm-hmm. I might need surgery. I might need to leave New York City Ballet. I'm in turmoil. And she was like, exactly. And I was like, you're crazy.
Thank you for sharing that.
I was like,
that.
You're crazy. And I was like, I can't guarantee a good ending. And she's like, I know. She's like, it's a documentary. Right. And I was like, but I want a good ending because I'm a ballerina.
Yeah.
And I don't ever do anything less than perfect. Less than positive and optimistic. And mm-hmm. But at the same time, I had no idea. And so she said, well, I know this filmmaker, and his daughter is at the School of American Ballet, so he knows dance a little bit. And he's a wonderful filmmaker. He's done this, this, and this. And his partner, Adam Schlesinger and Linda Sapphire, and they have a production team together. And he was interested in thinking about it. So I met him, and we talked about doing one day of shooting. You know, see if you can handle this for a year in your life. And I was like, okay, this is – when I walked in the door, the camera was on me. So it was like, well, this is obviously cinema verite. I'm not, you know – and I kind of dug that a little bit. It was okay. It wasn't so bad. And then I saw the footage from that day, and I was thrilled mm-hmm. because the cameraman, the photographer, Don Lenzer, has done a lot of dance films, and he's done a lot of documentaries, and he's renowned.
So he knows what he's doing.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Your face.
And he's dancing as I'm dancing
oh,
in the room.
Cool.
He's with me. So we started to create this sort of pas de deux, you know, with him and me. And we just dug each other, you know, his eye behind the camera, his impulses, and my actions. And I trusted these people. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And Diana said, at any moment, if it's too much, if you know, it'll just be a very expensive home movie for you. And you can pull out. But, you know, I wasn't going to pull out. I was like, I don't give up on
things. So how long did they follow you?
They followed me for about 16 months.
Whoa.
Yeah. And all these things started to unfold and reveal themselves. Basically, I found out I needed to get surgery. They came into my operating room.
How did you feel having your clothes off with this camera on you?
I'm in a leotard and tights.
You're right.
All day, my whole life. You see every bone and muscle. And
so warts
everything.
And all, yeah. This is not new to you.
Yeah. I mean, as a ballerina, you don't want to show your warts. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're like, mm-hmm. I don't show anything less than as most perfect facility and focus as I can. You don't fail as best you can. And so, you know, that's what I tried to do this for the camera, but, you know, I was failing and stumbling the whole time. And I thought, you know what? This is kind of beautiful.
And because it's so real.
It's real. It's human.
That's great.
And I thought, you know what? I can't be a dancer my whole life, but I can be an artist my whole life. And I will always be a human being, and I can be the finest human being I can, the most real and honest. And I thought, that's beautiful, and that's what I want to do. And I tried to let them get that from me.
Wow, what a philosophy that you could also live and incorporate. So we've run out of time, but you now have, in a sense, not say to reinvent yourself, mm-hmm. but you're teaching and you've danced into another arena.
Yeah, I've just done my newest full evening project, Sum of a Thousand Words, with one of my choreographers that I worked with on Restless Creature, Brian Brooks. Mm-hmm. And we toured nationally with the string quartet Brooklyn Rider. Mm-hmm. So we just did this tour. We'll pick it up and do another part of the tour in November. I'm going to be setting a ballet that I've never set a piece of work before. I'm setting a piece by Alexei Rutmansky for a wonderful ballet company in Seattle, Pacific Northwest Ballet. So I'll be doing that. So I'm learning. And
living.
I'm living.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not going to patronize you and say, see, but how fabulous. People just don't have that opportunity to kind of dance from one what, one part of their life into another. Even though that might have been hard to see when it was happening to you.
Terrifying. Because I was like, I can't teach. I don't know enough to teach.
And I don't want to teach,
and I don't
maybe.
I don't pick up steps quickly. But look, that's what I'm doing right now every day. So
is this a really good place you are in your life?
Right, it's terrifying and great and empowering, and it's giving me so much confidence, and it's liberating. And it is fantastic.
So we have a lot to still hear from Wendy Whalen.
I hope so.
I think so. I'm taking that to the bank, Wendy. I mean, that's just a given. I can't thank you enough for sharing your life and your career. It went fast, didn't it?
It did go fast.
This, I mean.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you.
I really can't thank you enough.
My pleasure.
Oh, terrific.
Thanks.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.